We're talking about black bear rehabilitation in Wisconsin and working with injured and orphaned bear cubs on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. A wildlife rehabilitation center in Rhinelander was in the news recently, having taken in three bear cubs last month that were tiny, tiny, weighing 4 pounds, put into incubators after their mother had been found dead in her den. We will get an update on how they're doing. Have you seen or had a close call with a black bear? What do you want to know about how orphaned bear cubs are rehabilitated and released back into the wild? It's 800-642-1234. Mark Naniot is a wildlife rehabilitator, founded Wild Instincts. That's a wildlife rescue service in Rhinelander over a decade ago. It's one of the only centers with a state permit to work with black bears. Mark, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having us.
Well, give us an update on these newborn bear cubs. How are they doing?
They are doing great. They've already doubled their size since we've had them, and so they're eating very well and doing extremely well.
Okay, so what are they eating? How are you housing them?
At this point, they're still eating from a bottle. And so they just recently, yesterday, were removed from the ICU that we had them in. And now they've got kind of a bigger little, it's almost like a cattle stock tank is what they're in right now. So they can do a little bit of moving around. They're just starting to be able to stand and take like a couple of wobbly steps at this point.
And so they're all together, I would imagine, and able
yes.
to kind of roll around and look at each other, open their eyes.
Yes, yes. If people want to see some videos, we have some videos on Facebook, too. And so, yes, they're doing very cute little bear things at the moment.
What were the circumstances around how they arrived at your facility?
There was a research project. So she was part of a research project they've had for a number of years.
She being the mother.
The mother, yes. And she had a radio collar on her. And so what the researchers do is they typically go into the den every year, early, you know, late winter, early spring, tranquilize the mother, replace the collar batteries or replace the collar. And because the batteries only last for about a year, year and a half. And so she's been in the situation several times before. They kind of study the cubs, see how many cubs they have, what the sex is. So I'm not sure exactly what their study does, is for. There's been several in the state over the years. But so they went in to tranquilize her, and it was a little bit of an unusual situation. This happens from time to time. There was a male cub, probably like a two-year-old, that went into the den with her also. And they normally don't do that the second year. They'll normally do that the first year. So it was probably her cub from 2 years prior. And so they had to tranquilize that one also. And that one was about 125 pounds. And what they surmised happened is once they both were tranquilized, this male accidentally rolled over onto the mother's head and she accidentally got suffocated.
So with these radio-collared bears, they're learning how far the black bear's range goes through the Midwest and through Wisconsin, I would imagine. What are you seeing here in Wisconsin in terms of their range?
Well, they're expanding their range. They're expanding the amount of cubs that they have. Typically, years ago, they would have 1 to 2 cubs. Now, 4 is very common. And we've seen 5 quite a few times as well in the wild. So that's a little bit more unusual. So their habitat has improved, and so their range is expanding. We did 5 different years where we radio collared our cubs on time of release and got some good information off of that as well. We had one situation where we released 5 cubs that were all radio collared. One denned up about 80 yards from the release site, and the other one went 120 miles in 10 days and ended up over the border of Michigan.
Can you explain the cycle? When do black bear sows typically give birth, and when might cubs emerge from dens?
So breeding season is usually in July, first part of July, and they have delayed implantation. And the cubs are born around the second week in January in the den. So it can be 20 below zero outside and mom is there having her cubs. And the cubs are typically about 1 to 1.5 pounds at birth. And so typically it kind of depends on weather. And right now things are kind of cold and snowy. So if things warm up, they'll come out a little sooner. Right now they're about 5 to 6 pounds in the den, but they're still not able to follow mom, not able to do anything. So she usually comes out about the first part of April or so. And sometimes that can vary as to weather.
talking with Mark Naniot, who's an animal rehabilitator at Wildlife Instincts in Rhinelander. You can join in. Have you had a close encounter with a black bear in Wisconsin? Share your experiences with us. What questions do you have about how orphaned bear cubs are rehabbed, released back into the wild? Join in at 800-642-1234. You have worked with hundreds of black bears over the years in a rehab situation. How do you know that a certain situation that you will be able to successfully rehabilitate a bear and that you'll take on that particular bear?
Yes, we've been rehabbing bears now for, that will be our 26th year, and we've done over 300 so far in our career. And so we've got a lot of experience with a lot of different situations. So you can tell, what the situation is going to be. Like these young cubs, we've done them this way many, many times before. And so we have ways of keeping them wild and making sure they don't get imprinted on humans. And, you know, our radio collar
and when
studies
you,
have shown.
I want to pause right here. When you say imprinted on humans, what do you mean by that?
It means that right now we're the primary caregivers. And so when they start opening up their eyes and start getting used to kind of what life is all about, we want to make sure that they don't think life is all about humans. And so we need to limit our access and limit our, you know, interaction with them as much as possible. And so that's the goal, is to keep them extremely limited from human contact. We don't show them to the public or anything like that. So we want to make sure they're true wild bears and don't go out there and become a nuisance. And so we work very hard to make sure that that happens. We've had situations where people have tried to get them as pets and imprinted them. And of course, it's a situation where then they can't be released and have to be found some type of zoo or type situation where they can go into.
So how long might you have them? How long would the rehabilitation last? I would assume it depends from one bear to the next.
Yeah, generally they're all born around the same time, but it depends on a situation if they're injured or anything like that. But normally if we get into cubs early, we release cubs in mid-October. So we wait till the hunting season is over. So at least they have one season where they don't have to worry about that. And so what we do is basically fatten them up all summer long. And by the time October rolls around, they're pretty much ready to go into a den anyway. And so they almost stop eating at that point because they've already got all the fat reserves they need to make it through the winter. So it's just a matter of releasing them in good, suitable habitat. And they'll probably spend a week or two roaming around a little bit, finding some place they want to go to sleep. And then that's it until spring.
So
they wake up again.
Good, suitable habitat. Where do you find that? Where do you release them?
Typically in some larger blocks of state forest. There is no middle of nowhere anymore. So it's not a situation where you can make sure that they're never going to see a human. Basically in Wisconsin, you can hardly go a square mile without finding some sort of home or cabin or something. But we try to get them in as wild of a place as we possibly can. You know, usually we have a block of state forest not far from here, for example, that's a little over 3,000 acres. And so we try to put them in large blocks. So at least it gives them a good chance to be in a good habitat area.
Do you work then with the DNR on a release date and a release location? How do you coordinate that?
We kind of did that years ago, but now they pretty much know that we have experience doing this and they pretty much trust us to, you know, release them in suitable areas.
We have wildlife rehabilitator Mark Naniot has helped hundreds of bears return to the wild. He's based in Rhinelander, provides temporary care for orphaned, injured, diseased, and displaced native wildlife. Have you encountered a hurt or abandoned wild animal and wondered if you should take them to an animal rescue center? Have you taken an animal to a rehabilitation center? What was that like? How do you deal with nuisance bears? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a moment with Mark Naniot here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing black bears and how to save and rehabilitate orphan cubs. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DNR says the black bear population is thriving in our state, about 24,000 bears. Their primary range, as we talked about, is located in the far northern third of Wisconsin. Have you encountered a black bear? What did you do? What do you do about black bears on your camping trips? Have you seen cubs without their mother? Join in at 800-642-1234. Mark Naniot is a wildlife rehabilitator in the Rhinelander area and is with us for the hour. Let's talk about nuisance bears. Black bears are, you know, being seen as far as the southern part of the state more frequently. Homeowners often reporting bears in their backyards eating from knocked over bird feeders. Where can rehabilitated bears be released without adding to the problem and issues of nuisance bears?
Well, that's, you know, can be a bit of a challenge. As I said, there's a lot of areas around where, you know, there's a lot of bears and a lot of humans. So a lot of times there's conflicts. So it can be very difficult sometimes. That's why it's very difficult to have situations where people habituate bears, feeding bears, and get them used to people. It's not a good idea to do. Everybody likes to see them, but it's a situation where if you move away or you pass away and somebody else goes into your house, now all of a sudden they've got habituated bears around the area that they may not be comfortable with. So it's a situation we always tell people to avoid that situation and not try to habituate any bears.
And what are some tips you would offer for people who want to make sure that they are doing their best to, you know, stay away from the bears or to be able to make sure that there is enough safety and, you know, autonomy for the bears to do their thing while humans also can also coexist?
Sure. You know, springtime is usually the hardest because the bears are just coming out of winter sleep and they're often very hungry. So that's the time when they're going to be hitting the bear feed, you know, bird feeders, garbage cans, things like that. So the best thing is just do your due diligence. You might have to stop feeding the bears for a few, you know, feeding the birds for a few weeks so the bears don't come around your feeders. Make sure your garbage is in a safe place, a garage or something like that that's secure. And that's the biggest thing is just to make sure that you're not doing anything that the bears are going to be attracted to. Once the vegetation starts to green up and things are a little bit more available for food, it's normally not so much of a problem.
So looking at these orphan bears, bear cubs in your care, how unusual is it to have some cubs like this young, or is that something you've worked with before?
Yeah, we do it quite often. We usually have situations, maybe logging operations, snowmobilers. Of course, there's a lot of people that vacation up here, have a vacation home, and they'll leave in the fall, and maybe they'll come up in the middle of winter. Well, nobody was around early in the fall, so the bear thought, well, this deck or shed or something was a great place to have my cubs and do my winter sleep. And so they come up in the middle of winter and displace them. We've had a couple other situations where there's been research projects where things have gone wrong. And so cubs have either been abandoned by their mother during the research process, or, you know, injured or sometimes pass away in the process as well. And so we've had young cubs. I would say it probably averages almost every other year.
Let's bring in a caller now. Linda is with us from Pewaukee. Linda, hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I just want to go back a little bit to how the bear died. It really sounds like your organization had to come in and clean up the mess that the researchers made. It sounds like quite a case of bungling, but they basically caused the death of the bear. And I'd like to also add quickly that many people may not know that for 180 days, basically the entire time that bears are active, people are allowed to put out millions of gallons of bear bait, which is now estimated makes up about 40% of a bear's diet. And so if conventional wisdom is that we are not supposed to feed wild animals, this kind of flies in the face of it and could cause many problems down the way. Thank you.
Linda, thank you for that. 2 points there. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, it definitely does. With feeding situation, what they allow, they start, bear hunters are allowed to bait for long periods of the year. They're also allowed to start training hounds as of the 1st of July. And so it's a situation where, yeah, there's a lot of bears that are being out there that are being fed by people and not necessarily the most nutritious diet. Right now, that's the way that our laws are, and not too much that we can do about it. At least they're usually putting them in more remote locations, and so they're not really associating a house or something with that particular food source. So that's one thing. You know, we don't have any control over that. So that's not something that we can really do. As far as the researchers, you know, this was an accident and sometimes things happen. So there's a lot of good information that we found over these research projects. We try to participate whenever we can. Like I said, it was kind of an unusual situation. This does not happen very often. You know, in the course of our 25 years, this is probably the third incident that we've had over all the years where something happened with a research project where we ended up with cubs. And so, you know, I don't really consider it a mess. It was an unfortunate situation for sure. You know, they feel horrible about it. And of course, they did the right thing. They immediately called us right from the den site and they had the cubs to us within about 2.5 hours. And so it's a situation where it was just an unfortunate accident. Nobody likes to see that. And, you know, it's always a kind of a balance and a toss up where, you know, it does our research hinder certain animals or get in the way or, you know, sometimes kill certain animals. And yes, sometimes it does. And, but that's unfortunately one of the ways that we find out more about certain animals and hopefully help them, you know, as a population.
Mark Naniot with us in a wildlife rehabilitator at Wildlife Instincts in Rhinelander. You can join in as we've been talking there. Should nature be allowed to take its course if an animal is injured or orphaned? If you agree, what exceptions would you make for an animal? Have you taken an animal to a rehabilitation center? How did that make you feel? 800-642-1234. Mark, what is the cost? What does it take to rehab and prepare to release a bear and the cost of that?
I know bear cubs are very expensive to raise, probably about the most expensive animal that we do raise. And of course, we're a not-for-profit organization. We don't get money from state, federal, county, anything like that. So it's all donations. The approximate cost to get in cubs this young, probably anywhere between $3,000 to $4,000 per cub. Year before last, we ended up doing 20. And so the cost can be very large. You know, in addition to the other animals that we did was last year, which over 1,300 animals. And so the cost for what we do is very large. A lot of people think that bears primarily eat meat, but they really don't. They eat a lot of berries and vegetation and things. So we buy a lot of produce between grapes, bananas, apples, peaches, pears, plums, all that type of thing. So we have a produce truck that comes to our facility about once a week, and it costs a lot of money to do.
And so the cost then for rehabilitating these bears is mainly due to the food expense is what I'm hearing. Is that right?
Exactly. So we do have some medications and different things that they will get periodically, worming medications, things like that. And of course, right now, the formula, you know, these little cubs are going through a lot of formula. The formula is extremely expensive as well. So they start out with the formula diet and then switch into a produce diet more so than anything.
How did you learn to do this work? Did you have a wildlife rehabilitator mentor, or how did you get into this?
I did. Actually, I got lost on my first day of kindergarten coming home and just randomly knocked on a door of this nice lady. And so she called my mother while I was waiting for her to come and pick me up. She said, "Do you want to come out and see my animals?" And she had turned her garage into a small little rehab center, if you will. And she had a couple baby squirrels and some young robins yet. And so, of course, I was hooked at the young age of 5 and started out going over to her house after that, and basically have been doing wildlife rehab pretty much the rest of my life since then.
Wow, what a story. That's really incredible that situation as a kindergartner really set the trajectory for your life.
It did. I always wondered if it would have been a plumber or electrician, my life could have been completely different.
So how does this system work? Because I'm curious, do you have to be sponsored by someone to become licensed to rehab certain animals in Wisconsin? And how does that work?
Yeah, so there's a process. You have to have a sponsoring veterinarian. You have to have an advanced rehabilitator to sponsor you. And there's two levels of rehabbers in the state of Wisconsin. There's a basic and an advanced. So you have to be a basic for 2 years and be, you know, sponsored by an advanced rehabber. Then you can take a test and become an advanced rehabber. And you need to have a certain amount of experience with each species before you can rehab that species. And so sometimes that can make it a little bit difficult just due to distance and things like that.
So how you know, the DNR, I think you're the only licensed one for bears. Is that right?
Currently, I believe so, yes.
And why do you think the DNR doesn't have more licensed bear rehabilitators? Is it just because there aren't people who want to do it? Or is it because the state only needs one? Why is that so?
The main thing is most people don't want to do it because it is a very expensive situation. You need to have a very large enclosure and several stages, because like right now the Cubs, of course, are inside, and we'll need to make probably three or four moves before they get to their final large enclosure outside. And so most people, between the time and expense, just don't have that ability.
Mark Nania with us, a wildlife rehabilitator in the Rhinelander area, co-owner of a wildlife rescue service there. Are you familiar with wildlife rehabilitation efforts in Wisconsin? How do you feel about how the system operates here, the number of rehabilitators, and what they can do for sick or orphaned wild animals? Join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick this up with Mark Naniot after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the work of wild animal rehabilitation in Wisconsin, and specifically black bears. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Get Bear Smart Society is an advocacy organization working on bears and humans safely coexisting. And they say black bear cubs can be rescued from the wild, placed in wildlife care centers, and that these programs offer significant conservation benefits. Are you curious about what the bears eat or how they react to the humans working with them? Have you been part of an effort to release a rehabilitated wild animal back into nature? What was that like? 800-642-1234. Mark Naniot of Rhinelander Rehabilitation Center Wild Instincts is with us for the hour. Becky is joining us from Hustisford. Hi, Becky. What would you like to bring up?
Hello, and thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for this subject. I'm originally from northern Wisconsin, and where I grew up, we had a lot of bears around us living near some creeks. And so I grew up, having been taught by my parents and my grandparents, there's something to be admired from a distance. They went about their business, and we'd make noise as we walked through the woods so they could find out where we were and get away from us. I now live in southern Wisconsin, and on numerous occasions, I've had to rescue animals and bring them to rehab centers. And by saying I had to rescue them, these were animals primarily that had been hit by cars or in some other way, like shot by a human. So when sometimes people say, let nature take its course, sadly, there is no place on our planet, and certainly not in Wisconsin, where the lives of animals, wild animals, are not impacted by humans. Mm. So I've taken animals to both Wildlife in Need in the Waukesha area, and also to the one in Madison when I was in that area and found a turtle that had been hit or someone had swerved onto the shoulder and run over it. So I'll take the rest of my comments.
Well, Becky, thank you for that, those experiences and sharing them. What was, when you took those animals in, what was your experience like as you handed them over? And, what did you encounter?
Well, the people there were very gracious and helpful. At Wildlife in Need and at the location in Madison, they gave, if you might call it, a case number to the animal so that I could call back to find out how the animal was doing. In some instances, the animal survived. In some instances, they had been too badly injured. I'd rescued a young Cooper's hawk from a roadway that had been hit when someone had swerved and hit it while it was apparently feeding on another dead animal on the side of the road. And being an adolescent, and this was in the late winter, early spring, where there wasn't a lot of food around and the snow had been pretty deep. So sadly, it wasn't able to survive, but others of the animals have and have been released into the wild.
Becky, thank you. Mark, you know, what Becky is explaining there is really some great interaction as Becky takes an animal that is in need of help to one of these centers. And, Becky mentioning the animal getting a case number, and is Becky able to follow up on that animal?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, thanks, Becky. We appreciate the help for the wildlife for sure. You know, kind of what we feel is that humans broke it, so we should fix it. Nature take its course. That might be true for some things, but in a lot of cases, we directly cause these situations. So we feel like we should be there to fix it. And as far as funding and things go, if people didn't appreciate what we do and find it of value, we wouldn't exist because we wouldn't be able to be funded. And so we keep track of all the animals as well. So when the animals come in, we, you know, invite people to call back or email or whatever, check back anytime for updates. And so we try to do that whenever we possibly can.
Last year alone, your center rehabbed more than 1,300 animals, more than 100 species brought to you. What are some examples of other species you frequently see and rehabilitate?
Pretty much if you see it in Wisconsin, we will rehabilitate it. Anything from mice to bears, hummingbirds to eagles, and pretty much everything in between. A lot of, you know, white-tailed deer fawns. We normally do anywhere between 50 to 60 eagles per year as far as rehabilitation. Hawks, owls, you know, songbirds, you name it, we do it.
So 50 to 60 eagles, what are the situations they come to you with?
Probably one of the most common is lead poisoning, and probably second to that would be hit by cars.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's go to Sharon now in Lac des Flambeaux. Sharon, hi, go ahead.
Hi, Mark. This is Sharon Riley.
Good morning.
Thank you for good morning. Another fantastic program, and thank you for all of your hard work and efforts. The reason why I'm calling is to talk about lead toxicity in bald eagles. So what a perfect segue that you gave me. I have been proposing to the Wisconsin DNR Conservation Council a lead minimization, mitigation, and conservation fund, and I'll be submitting that resolution again this year. And I know you know, but I don't know if all the WPR listeners have seen the recent study that was out about lead toxicity, chronic lead toxicity in golden eagles and bald eagles. I'm curious about how many eagles do you treat or have treated in the past with lead, and what is the cost of that? You know this, but lead, even though eagle populations are increasing, which is great and wonderful, lead is something that has a chronic condition, and any animal that has lead toxicity is going to die a very slow and painful death, which is basically starvation.
Sharon, thank you for bringing that up. And Mark, even if you could start two steps back, how do you treat for lead toxicity in an animal, and what is that treatment like?
So what we do is a blood test. We have a lead analyzer here on site, and then it's a chemical injection that can last anywhere. We've even had to inject some for as much as 6 months. We currently have a swan right now that had ingested some lead pellets, and we've been treating that one for months for lead toxicity. And so it can be very difficult sometimes to get the lead out, and it's a situation where we see a lot of it. One article she was just talking about talked about 50% of what they're studying have lead poisoning. We typically, because we're in the North Woods, have a lot more hunting and fishing going on here. So we normally see a much higher rate of that. A couple of years ago, we did a study on every single eagle that came in, did a lead test on every one, and we had 98% out of 48 eagles that had lead poisoning.
Wow. Wow. That's high. So what are the outcomes then as you treat these animals, as you treat the swan and the eagle, what kind of outcome might they have?
It varies as to the individual and the amount of exposure that they have. Sometimes they can swallow multiple shot pellets. We had one eagle that swallowed an entire bullet that was in some type of animal that it ate. And of course, so the more exposure, the less the chances are of getting that animal successfully back into the wild. Sometimes you can get them to survive, but then they have permanent, long-lasting neurological effects, kidney, liver damage. So there's a lot of effects from lead. And so the percentage kind of varies as to the amount of exposure that they had and how long the exposure was.
How do you work with veterinarians? I mean, how do you know whether an animal might need a surgical procedure versus just purely rehabilitation that injections could provide?
Well, for the most part, when it comes to lead treatment, we probably have more experience than what the veterinarians do in that particular case. We have a couple different veterinarians that work with us to do major surgeries and things. Otherwise, we pretty much do everything else in-house. We've got our own x-ray machine, our own lead analyzer. And so we do, you know, we're very good at doing physical exams as well. So unless it's an animal that needs extremely, you know, large amounts of surgery or large amounts of certain treatment, basically everything that way is done here in-house.
So would you say that the toxicity from lead is coming primarily then from bullets and pellets? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's probably the largest weight. Otherwise, it's fishing tackle as well. So jig heads and sinkers primarily are made of lead. So, you know, as Sharon was saying, we're trying to get people kind of educated on switching all their hunting and fishing equipment to alternative materials that are not lead. The, you know, alternatives are out there. We just have to get people informed and get them to switch.
So alternatives are out there, and that could have a huge impact on wildlife if people do switch away from these, you know, pieces of lead in their bullets and in their pellets.
Absolutely. You know, we used to have lead in our gasoline. We used to have lead in our paints. You know, we've taken out of that. We stopped allowing lead shot for duck hunting over lakes, rivers, streams back in the 80s. So now it's time to get it out of the rest of it. You know, we're not anti-hunting or fishing by any means, but we just want to make it safer for all the wildlife out there.
We're talking with Mark Naniot, who's a wildlife rehabilitator in the Rhinelander area, has been there for years. You can join in with your questions about wildlife rehabilitation, what you've seen, what you've encountered, 800-642-1234. So, Mark, what advice do you have for people who come across an animal like Becky did and has done, you know, had in the past experiences when they think they should take that next step, be taken in and cared for? How do you approach the animal? What do you do in those situations?
So we're available 24/7. We're one of the few facilities that still take phone calls 24/7, 365. So anytime anybody has any type of animal situation, they're always welcome to call us and we'll be happy to talk them through it. We usually tell people not to, you know, touch the animal or do anything until we talk to them. So that way they can be safe and the animal can be safe.
Do you ever remove an animal yourself? Do you ever take the animal or do you, is it strictly that people bring them to you?
Yeah, we still do actually a lot of rescues. So we actually have about 140 volunteers that will actually go out and do transports and rescues for us as well. And in many cases, we have to go out ourselves to do rescues, especially when it comes to some of the larger animals, such as an adult bear or sometimes even an eagle. Most people don't want to pick those up, which is a good thing. And so we do still do a lot of rescues.
Mark Naniot, Rehabilitation Director at Wild Instincts in Rhinelander. What questions do you have about whether a bear cub is a good candidate for rehabilitation? What do you want to know about the relationship between cubs and their mothers, how cubs develop? Still time to talk about wildlife rehabilitation in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mark Naniot here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The state DNR says black bear mothers may leave their cubs for up to 15 hours while they search for food elsewhere. And so if you happen to come across bear cubs without their mother, do not handle them. Leave them where you found them. After 15 hours and still no sign, the DNR has a toll-free number to call for help in finding a licensed black bear rehabilitator. Have you ever been in this situation? What did you do? Still time, 800-642-1234. Mark Naniot, a wildlife rehabilitator licensed for black bears, is with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Angela in Madison. Hi, Angela.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad you're doing this show. I had called in when you were looking for ideas for shows and put in a plug for a show on wildlife rehabilitation because I mainly wanted to plug, thank you, Mark, for the work that you do. I was a wildlife rehabilitator for a number of years and retired out because I was working by myself, and it's out of your own pocket unless you can get donations. You receive no county, no federal, no state funding for this. So it's a lot of hard work. You don't get a day off. And the sad state of affairs, I don't know if you've addressed this already, the need of rehabilitators. But in my county, I was the only person, and it was just me. I didn't have a center. It was just me. The county south of me, there's only one licensed person, and she only does Raptors. The county to the north of me was nobody. Counties west and east took in animals, but not raccoons. Hmm. So it's really hard. Compassion fatigue is a real thing.
I'm hearing, yes.
Yeah. So I really wanted to put in a plug for if you could discuss how people can get into it, how can they can volunteer at a center, how they can become foster licensed under someone else's license to see if it's their cup of tea, and then how they can work to become licensed themselves, because we really need more people.
Angela, thank you so much. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, we definitely do need more people, that's for sure. In Wisconsin right now, there's only a little over 100 wildlife rehabilitators, and with the size of the state and the counties. For example, last year, we took animals in from 43 different counties. So we deal with a very big geographical range, and it makes it very difficult. It's a situation where the average career lifespan for a wildlife rehabber right now is about 3 years. Most people do get the compassion fatigue and just don't know how to deal with that situation, giving up their summer vacations, weekends, everything like that. A lot of these animals need 24-hour care. And so it's a very difficult field for people to get into. And of course, there's not a lot of money in it either. I'm a full-time volunteer. I've had one day off in the last 10 years, and that's only because I was too sick to function. Other than that, I've been here every single day. And that's just kind of the way that it works as a wildlife rehabber. So to try to get people interested in this field or involved in this field can be very difficult. So the best way to do is start out with a volunteer situation, find out what it's all about. And if it's for you, then you start going through the process, which is, you know, either doing more volunteer fostering at home. A lot of the larger centers that deal with thousands of animals will have people that will rehab certain species out of their homes, gray squirrels, rabbits, things like that, just to get a little bit of pressure off the center. But it's a very difficult situation to get people.
Do you have volunteers at your center, and what do they do?
We do. We have volunteers that a lot of times will do some of the basic things like dishes and taking care of our permanent residents that we have for education birds. But and then we also have a few other volunteers that are interested in doing more of the patient care as well. It changes very frequently. You have to have a lot of knowledge about what you're doing. And most people just don't have that kind of time to dedicate toward it. And then, of course, you throw in COVID, and that kind of threw a monkey wrench into things the last couple of years also.
Well, certainly the model with the high out-of-pocket costs, the daily hard work, I would imagine burnout is a real potential thing here.
It definitely is. As far as the amount of people that have been doing this, as long as I have professionally, I could probably count on one hand very easily and maybe even have a finger or two left over.
Mm. Let's go to Mark in Milwaukee. Mark, hi.
Oh, hi. I'm with the Wisconsin Animal Protection Society, and I also want to just give a shout-out for how important your organization is and what you do. And I had a question. So how many – you mentioned like 100 rehabilitators roughly around the state. Are there certain counties that just don't have any? I'm assuming maybe in the southern part of the state, maybe there's fewer rehabilitators.
How dispersed?
A little bit more in the southern part of the state than there is the northern part of the state. So, you know, I mean, there's not many, and there's a lot of people that are just operating out of their house or their garage. So they don't really have big centers. There's not really a lot of big centers in the state that take care of a lot of animals. So a lot of these people that do wildlife rehab are just, they're doing maybe 30, 40, 50 animals a year.
I would imagine, though, the DNR keeps a centralized list so you can know who is doing what where.
There is. There's a directory on the DNR's website that you can get onto for a wildlife rehab directory. So you can just type in wildlife rehab and it'll show you where all the rehabbers are throughout the state.
Let's go to Jim now in Hurley. Jim, hi. What is your story? Jim, are you there? I think we're having some issues there. Can't hear you, Jim. So what about non-native species that come your way? What do you do in those situations?
As far as domestics, we don't do anything with domestics. But as far as the other animals, such as like starlings, house sparrows, rock doves, those type of animals, it's a recommendation that they don't be rehabbed. We still have a policy where we still do take care of the non-natives. And we do a small amount being in the North Woods. We don't see a lot of those particular species, but at this point, we still do rehab them.
So in terms of your facilities, at 73 acres, 5 acres of enclosures, is that adequate space for you to treat all of these animals?
For the most part, it is, yes. And so as we grow, of course, we've been purchasing more property. We just purchased 53 acres just to the north of us. We want to start an education center as well. So we plan on starting a nature center there. So, you know, education is a big key to what we do as well. But yeah, some of our enclosures are fairly large and do take up a fair amount of space, but we do have plenty of space to grow.
I would imagine then you'd have to do a lot in the area of philanthropy and fundraising in order to keep your operation going. How much of a challenge is that?
It's a huge challenge. And of course, especially with COVID, a lot of our fundraisers have been canceled. And so you never know what you're going to do from one day to the next. You know, we're being cleaning toilets one minute and feeding bears the next minute. So it's a situation where we have to basically do it all. So we do the fundraising, we do the animal care. I've got a program this afternoon at a church camp. So we'll be doing a program for some eighth grade students. And so we do a little bit of everything.
Are there changes that you see coming on the horizon that would, you know, help your work and help more rehabilitators do their work across the state? What are you watching for?
Well, we have different, you know, emerging diseases, which always happen. There's an outbreak of avian influenza this year. And so we're very worried about that as well. Some of the southern states are starting to see some of that on the flyways. So diseases are always something that kind of throw a monkey wrench into things. And then, of course, our current economic situation is also a very big concern. So we normally would have a lot of interns applying for positions. We normally hire interns spring, summer, fall. This year, we did not even have a single person apply for our spring internship. And so that means our staff is going to be working 16, 17 hours a day, 7 days a week to try to take care of these animals coming in. And so that's probably one of our biggest challenges right now. Same thing that every restaurant and store and everything else is facing is trying to get employees.
Well, let's, in our last few moments together, circle back around to these newborn bear cubs and when you might think that they'll be strong enough to be released back into the wild.
That will be about mid-October. And so they'll be at that point anywhere between 100 and 120 pounds and perfectly capable and ready to go back out into the wild and do their thing.
Are you optimistic that they will be rehabilitated? Because, you know, some of these species are not. They don't have those outcomes.
Correct. And that's one of the things that the national average for rehab centers is probably about 50%, because a lot of the animals that come in are too badly injured and can't make it back into the wild. In the particular case of these bear cubs, they should do fine. They're all in excellent shape and no injuries to them at all. So it's just a matter of raising them up properly, which we've had experience doing before. And so everything should go well with these little guys.
Mark, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
Mark Naniat, wildlife rehabilitator, co-owner of Wild Instincts in Rhinelander. The DNR's toll-free information line is 1-888-WDNR-INFO. That's 888-936-7463 for help in finding a licensed wildlife rehabilitator. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.